Doesn't stop kissing me, not even to come up for air. Doesn't stop touching me everywhere. He hungrily explores my neck, my breasts, my belly, and then he's between my legs, his tongue slicking over my clit, hot and greedy. I used to be so self-conscious when my high school boyfriend did this to me. It was always too intimate, made me feel exposed. But with Logan, I'm too consumed with pleasure to care how vulnerable this position makes me. My hips strain to meet him, aching for more, and he chuckles and gives me the contact I crave. He wraps his lips around my clit and sucks, and if I hadn't been lying down, I would have keeled right over. Pleasure shoots up my spine and surges through my bloodstream, and when he pushes one long finger inside me, my mind fragments into a million pieces. I come faster than I expect, faster than he expects, and he groans as I convulse against his face, his tongue and finger working me through the orgasm. As I crash back to earth, he lifts his head with a soft curse. "I love making you come," he mumbles. "It's so fucking hot." His finger slides out, then in again, and an aftershock of pleasure sizzles through me. "And you're so fucking wet." I whimper when his finger disappears, but the disappointment is replaced with pulsing excitement because he's reaching into the top drawer on the night table to grab a condom. Swallowing hard, I watch him roll it down the length of his shaft, skillfully. God, he's probably rolled on a million condoms in his lifetime. He's pretty much a sexpert. What if I suck at sex? My heart gallops at a breakneck speed when he lowers his strong body over mine. His lips brush my temple, softly, sweetly. "You sure about this?" he whispers. I gaze up at him, my worries fading away. "Yes." His features are taut in concentration as he brings his erection to my opening. He nudges forward, and I tense involuntarily. The intrusion is barely a millimeter deep, but the pressure is intense. His cock is a lot bigger than the one finger he'd just had inside me.
"Are you okay?"
His voice is husky, laced with concern. "Yes," I say again. Heat unfurls in my core, and my clit pulses in time to my rapid heartbeat. Logan eases in half an inch, where he meets resistance. It's a foreign sensation, but not unpleasant. Beads of sweat dot his forehead, and the tendons of his neck strain, as if he's fighting for control. Anticipation that borders on dread lodges in my chest. It's probably the worst possible comparison to draw right now, but this reminds me of the first time my mom took me to the salon to get my legs waxed. Lying there while the hot wax was applied to my skin, watching the esthetician grip the corner of the warm strip, anticipating the pain as I waited for her to rip it off. "I think we need to band-aid this," I blurt out. "Forget slow, just do it fast." He chokes out a laugh.
"I don't want to hurt you."
In fact, he stopped moving altogether, his erection neither plunging nor retreating, just there. "What's the matter, Johnny? Scared?" Defiance flares in his eyes.
"Mocking a guy isn't going to get you laid, baby."
"Stalling isn't going to either." I grin up at him.
"Come on, baby, deflower me."
Logan keeps one hand on my hip, but lifts the other to my mouth, giving my lower lip a chastising pinch.
"Don't rush me, woman."
His gaze softens as he sweeps it over my face.
"Are you sure?"
"Yes." That one measly syllable barely leaves my mouth before he plunges deep. I gasp, the jolt of pain taking me by surprise. He's all the way inside, and from the tight stretch of his features, I know he's forcing himself to remain still.
"You with me?"
he murmurs. I nod. The pain is already abating. I tentatively move my hips, and his eyes roll to the top of his head.
Jesus Christ, he croaks.
God, why isn't he moving? I feel so completely full, yet oddly empty. He once again checks in on my mental, emotional, and physical state.
How are you doing?
I roll my eyes. Great. How about you?
I'm dying here.
Finally, he does something other than lie motionless on top of me. His erection inches out just slightly, then glides back in. Pleasure shoots through me. Oh, do that again.
You sure? I'm trying to give you time to adjust.
I'm good. I swear. His mouth finds mine in a sweet, tender kiss, and then his hips begin to move, thrusting and retreating in a lazy rhythm that draws a shaky noise from my throat. I hold on tight, digging my fingers into his strong back.
Wrap your legs around me.
He rasps. I do, and the angle changes immediately, deeper contact, locking our bodies tighter than before. He fills me over and over again, each long stroke intensifying the ache inside me until every square inch of skin is hot and tight and screaming for relief. I need more. My clit is swollen, throbbing. I reach between us and rub it, and the extra stimulation is glorious. Logan's elbows rest on either side of my head as he increases the pace, his hips snapping forward, his lips latched on mine as if he can't bear not kissing me. When he hits a spot deep inside, the tension explodes in an orgasm so intense I don't even make a sound. I arch my spine and slam my eyes shut, my breath stuck in my throat, my lips glued to his. Oh, fuck. He slams in one last time. His back, damp with sweat, trembles beneath my palms as he grunts in release. His heart hammers against my breasts, and I feel almost smug because I did this to him. I made him curse and groan and wobble as if the world beneath his feet had vanished. I made him come apart, and he did the same damn thing to me. Afterward, we lie on our sides facing each other. I'm limp and sated, too lazy to move, but not too lazy to admire the beautiful male body stretched out next to me. He's long and powerful, not a shred of fat on him, just thick muscle stretched tight against bone. His arms are deliciously ripped, his thighs massive. You're huge, I remark.
You calling me pudgy?
He demands, but he's smiling as he says it. Don't worry, I like being in bed with a big, manly hockey player. I lazily stroke his biceps. But seriously, you're huge. Big chest, big legs, big hands.
Big dick,
he supplies.
Don't forget about the big dick.
You mean this teeny thing? My fingers travel to his groin, running over his satin-smooth hardness. I have no idea how he's still hard after what we just did. Hold on, I tell him. Let me find a magnifying glass so I can get a better look.
Shut your mouth, woman.
Laughing, he flips me over so I'm pinned under the muscular body I was just admiring. He leans in to kiss my neck. Nope, the jerk doesn't kiss it. He blows a loud raspberry that makes me shriek in delight.
What were you saying about my dick?
Nothing, I squeal. It's the perfect size for my needs. He snickers, then rolls over so we're face to face again and slips one leg between both of mine.
I haven't done this before,
he admits.
You know, lie around naked with a girl, just talking.
I haven't done the naked part, but my high school boyfriend and I did the lying around talking thing all the time.
What'd you talk about?
Everything. School, life, TV shows, whatever came to mind.
Why'd you guys break up?
Brandon got a scholarship to UCLA, I got one to Breyer, and we didn't want to have a long-distance relationship. Those never work out.
They do sometimes.
He disagrees. I guess. But neither of us wanted to even try, so... I sigh. So, evidently, we didn't have a romance for the ages.
How come you never had sex?
Logan asks curiously. I don't know. Just didn't happen. And it didn't help that we hardly ever got to be alone. My dad had a strict rule about me leaving my bedroom door open, and Brandon's parents were even stricter. We weren't even allowed to hang out upstairs. It had to be in the living room with his mother spying on us from the kitchen. He wrinkles his forehead.
I find it hard to believe that you couldn't find some alone time in... How long were you together?
6 months. And yeah, obviously there were times, but like I said, it just didn't happen. One large hand covers my breast, squeezing gently.
Are you saying he seriously never tried to get a piece of this? Maybe he was gay.
Trust me, he wasn't. He's actually married now. Logan's jaw falls open.
Really? Was he older than you?
Nope, same age. Apparently, he fell head over heels in love with some girl on the first day of college, and they got married this summer. His mother told my dad all about it. I shiver when the pad of his thumb grazes my nipple, but he doesn't seem to be starting anything up. His cheek rests against the pillow, his features relaxed as he absently caresses me. Did you have a girlfriend in high school? I ask. He waggles his eyebrows.
I had many.
Ooh, what a stud.
There were two serious girlfriends, though. The first one was in freshman year. I lost my virginity to her.
How old were you, 15?
14.
He winks at me.
I started early. That's why I'm so good at it.
I roll my eyes, and so humble, too. I stop to think about it. 14 seems way too young to be having sex.
I don't know if you could even call what we did sex,
he answers with a snort.
The first time lasted about 3 seconds, if that. Seriously, I got in, came, got out. The times after that, it was 10 seconds, if that. I was such a horn dog, I couldn't control myself when she took her clothes off.
What about the second girlfriend?
That's when I was a junior. We dated for about a year. She was a great girl, kind of spoiled, but I didn't mind because I liked spoiling her.
He frowns.
She cheated on me with an older guy. Actually, I think he went to Breyer.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Broke my fucking heart.
He gives an exaggerated groan of pain, then takes my hand and places it on his chest.
I've waited years for someone to show up and put it back together.
I groan, too, from the sheer lameness of that statement. You should have put that line in your poem.
I'll write you another one.
He promises. Oh, God, please don't. A yawn overtakes me and I twist around to glance at the alarm clock, surprised to find that it's only 10:15. Why am I so tired?
I wore you out, huh?
He smiles smugly.
I was afraid I might have lost my moves during my CS, but I've still got it.
CS? His abbreviations drive me nuts sometimes. I'm praying one of these days I'll be able to figure them out on my own.
Celibacy stretch,
he explains. It's only been 3 weeks, horn dog.
Actually, it's been 6 months.
My eyebrows soar. You haven't had sex in 6 months?
Nope.
A sheepish look fills his face.
Not since I met you.
Bullshit. Now he looks hurt.
You think I'm lying?
No, of course not. My mind struggles to digest the information. Even before I met the guy, I was well aware of his reputation. I witnessed it firsthand when he stumbled out of that bathroom at the frat party. And he and I were apart the entire summer. Is he seriously telling me he didn't fool around with someone even once during that time? Granted, I didn't either, but I'm not John Logan, the man whore who slept with half the girls at Pryor.
I almost did.
He adds, his features pained.
It was early on in the summer, and you were still ignoring my messages. I went to this chick's place, fully intending to sleep with her, but when she tried to kiss me, I took off. It just didn't feel right.
I'm floored. Utterly floored.
But this?
He leans closer and gently presses his mouth against mine in the sweetest kiss imaginable.
This?
Another kiss.
Feels.
And another one.
Right.
Chapter 30. Logan. Best weekend ever. I honestly can't remember the last time I smiled this much, or laughed this much, or fucked this much. Grace and I have been going at it like bunnies since Friday night, and each time is even better than the last. Now it's late Sunday morning and we're still going at it, tangled up in the sheets as my cock plunges into her tight heat. I've been diligent about asking her whether she's sore, but she keeps claiming she's not, and if she is sore, then she's powering through it like a champ. Like a hockey player who bandages himself up, throws on his pads, and hits the ice, because the game is that important to him. I guess I'm that important to her. Or maybe she just likes the ridiculous amount of orgasms I've given her. And she's about to get another one. I went down on her for 30 minutes before I couldn't take it anymore, desperately needing to be inside her, and her pussy is still wet and swollen from the ministrations of my tongue. It clutches me like a goddamn vice, while her slender body flexes against mine, her spine arching to meet each hurried thrust. She's close. I've memorized her responses, the noises she makes and the way her inner muscles ripple around my cock when her orgasm is imminent.
Oh,
she gasps when I rotate my hips, and her eyes glaze over.
Feels so good.
Good doesn't even begin to describe it. It's fucking divine. Pure heaven, right here in this bed. I worship her pussy. I worship her. The base of my spine tingles, pleasure tightening my muscles. I snake my hands beneath her ass and dig my fingers into her firm flesh. Locking us tighter, fucking her harder. I come first, my mind scattering, foggy and incoherent. She's right behind me, squeezing the hell out of my dick as she makes a breathy, blissful noise that drives me wild. Every time after we've had sex this weekend, I've almost blurted out that I love her. And every time, I've clamped my lips together to stop the words from escaping because I'm scared of saying it too soon. I've known her since April, but we weren't dating then. Now we are, and it's nearing the 1 month mark. But I'm not sure what the etiquette for I love yous is. I told my first girlfriend I loved her after 2 weeks of dating. My second, after 5 months. So maybe I should split the difference and tell Grace at the 3 month point. Yeah, that seems like an appropriate amount of time. Once we recover from our respective orgasms, we decide to finally drag ourselves out of bed. It's almost noon and we haven't eaten since we woke up, and my stomach rumbles like the engine of a muscle car. We throw on some clothes, because no matter how many times I try to convince her, Grace refuses to walk around naked in case my roommates come home. I've been teasing her mercilessly about her unwarranted modesty, but I'm quickly discovering that Grace has one incredibly annoying trait. She's always right. We've just entered the kitchen when footsteps echo from the front hall.
See? She gloats at me. They would have caught us.
Trust me, the guys have seen me naked on multiple occasions, I answer dryly.
Well, they're never going to see me naked, not if I can help it.
I suddenly picture Dean ogling her bare tits, and the hot streak of jealousy it triggers makes me realize just how grateful I am that she decided to wear clothes. But it's not Dean who strides into the kitchen a minute later. It's Garrett, with Hannah on his tail. although they looked startled to find Grace at the counter. They greet her with warm smiles before turning to smirk at me. Smug bastards. I know exactly what's going through their heads. A sing-song taunt. Logan has a girlfriend. Hey, I narrow my eyes. I thought you guys were crashing at the dorm this weekend. I bet you did, Garrett mocks, his gray eyes gleaming. Yes, because that's what you told me, I say pointedly. Hannah walks up to Grace and sticks out her hand.
Hi, we haven't been formally introduced. I'm Hannah. I'm Grace.
I know. Hannah can't seem to wipe the big, stupid smile off her face.
Logan talks about you all the time.
Grace glances at me.
You do?
All the livelong day, Garrett confirms, flashing his big, stupid smile. He also writes long, sweeping poems about you and recites them to us in the living room every night. Hannah snorts. I give him the finger.
Oh, I know about the poems,
Grace tells my best friend.
I've already submitted the one he sent me to an anthology press in Boston.
I whirl around to glare at her. You better be kidding about that. Garrett gives a hoot of laughter. Doesn't matter if she is, because now I'll be submitting it.
I feel left out, Hannah announces. Why am I the only one who hasn't read this poem? I'll email it to you,
Grace offers, which brings a hell no growl from my lips. So, what are we eating? Garrett marches over to the fridge. I'm starving, and someone didn't want to stop at the diner for brunch.
I'm there 4 days a week, his girlfriend protests. It's the last place I want to go on my days off.
He pulls out 2 cartons of eggs. You guys feel like omelets? We're all in agreement, so Garrett gets busy cracking eggs while Hannah and Grace chop vegetables at the counter. My job is to set the table, which takes all of 30 seconds. Smirking, I plop down on a stool and watch them work.
You're doing dishes,
Hannah warns as she hands Garrett a cutting board laden with green peppers. I'm cool with that. I lean my elbows on the counter and ask, so why'd you guys come back early?
Because Allie and Sean are currently engaged in an epic fight.
She glances at Grace.
My roommate and her boyfriend.
Soon to be ex from the sounds of it, Garrett remarks from the stove. I don't think I've ever heard 2 people yell at each other like that before. Hannah sighs.
Sometimes they really bring out the worst in each other. But on the flip side, they also bring out the best in each other. That's why they keep breaking up and getting back together. I thought for sure it would stick this time, but who knows?
A mouth-watering aroma begins wafting through the kitchen. Garrett's not the greatest cook, but he makes damn good omelets. 10 minutes later, he serves us fluffy golden goodness loaded with cheese, mushrooms, and peppers. And the 4 of us settle around the table. It feels like a double date, which is surreal as hell. Up until last year, Garrett wasn't interested in girlfriends. And up until last month, neither was I. I like it, though. Hannah and Grace are getting along. The conversation's lively. We laugh a lot. I can't remember the last time I felt so at peace. And by the time we finish eating, I don't even care that I'm stuck doing dishes. Grace takes pity on me and helps me clear the table, then follows me to the sink, where I quickly rinse each plate before loading them in the dishwasher.
I can see why you wanted her.
Her voice is barely audible, but wistful enough that it makes my shoulders go rigid. When I realize she's gazing at Hannah, guilt pricks my heart, bringing a sharp sting of pain. I hadn't mentioned Hannah's name when I told Grace about her in April, but I had admitted to liking my best friend's girlfriend. Clearly, Grace has put 2 and 2 together.
She's funny and really pretty,
Grace says awkwardly. I dry my hands with a dish rag and grasp her chin, drawing her gaze to mine. I didn't want her, I murmur. I nudge Grace's head in the direction of the table again. I wanted that. Garrett has just tugged Hannah into his lap, 1 arm wrapping around her as he plants a kiss on the tip of her nose. The fingers of his free hand thread through her dark hair, and she leans closer to whisper something in his ear that makes him chuckle. The way they look at each other, the reverence with which he touches her. They're disgustingly in love, and anyone can see it, including Grace, who turns back to me with a smile.
Yeah, who wouldn't want that?
Once the kitchen is squeaky clean, we disappear upstairs again, but not to have sex. We've barely slept this weekend thanks to our fuckathon. Not complaining, by the way. So we decide to take a nap. I set the alarm to make sure we don't oversleep because I'm supposed to drive Grace to her dad's house at 6. We climb under the covers and I yank her warm body toward me, spooning her from behind. A contented sigh slips out. But right as I start to drift off, her voice teases me back to a state of alertness.
John, she murmurs.
My heart squeezes. I don't know why it does that every time she uses my first name. She calls me Logan, too, and Johnny when she's making fun of me. But it's only John that floods my chest with emotion like this.
Do you want to come for dinner?
I stiffen, and she doesn't miss the response. She releases a soft laugh and adds,
you're allowed to say no, but, I mean, you've already kind of met my mother. And just so you know, my dad isn't too scary. If anything, you might find him boring. He talks about science a lot.
Right. She'd mentioned that he was a biology professor. That's not what worries me, though. The last time I met a girl's parents, I was in high school, and it wasn't a big deal back then. If anything, it was unavoidable, considering my girlfriend and I lived with our parents. And yeah, I've already Skyped with Grace's mom, but that hadn't felt like an official meeting or anything. It had been fun and casual. No big deal at all. But meeting Grace's father, in person, feels like a big deal. Says the guy who's in love with her. Good point. Hell, I ventured into big deal territory the moment I realized how I feel about her. Will he mind if I come?
Not at all. Mom already told him I had a boyfriend, so he's actually been bugging me about meeting you, she confesses.
Okay. Then sure. My arm tightens around her. I'd love to.
Grace. It's a pleasantly warm evening, so Dad decides we should eat on the patio. He grills up some steaks on the barbecue while Logan and I take care of the rest of dinner. I'm in charge of the baked potatoes. Logan's handling the salad. But watching the sheer concentration with which he slices those tomatoes, you'd think he was vying for a slot on Top Chef. Relax, Johnny, I tease. Your salad preparation expertise has no bearing on whether he'll like you or not. Besides, I think my dad already likes him. He hasn't cross-examined Logan like I expected him to, and I think he was secretly relieved when Logan cracked a joke during their introductions. My father always thought Brandon was completely lacking in personality. Yep, Mr. I Teach Molecular Biology actually sat me down one day and informed me that my boyfriend was boring, which was totally not the case. Brandon was shy, not boring. When we were alone, that boy had me doubled over in laughter. But Dad never got to see that, and there's no denying that Logan possesses far more confidence than Brandon ever had. Within 5 minutes of meeting him, Logan gave my dad a good-natured reprimand for raising me to hate hockey, and Dad brings that up again once we're seated at the glass table on the deck. Here's the thing, John, he says as he cuts into his T-bone. Gracie is smart enough to recognize the shockingly inferior level of skill that hockey demonstrates. His eyes twinkle playfully. Logan mock gasps. How dare you, sir? Face it, kid, football requires a whole other level of athleticism. Looking pensive, my boyfriend chews a bite of his baked potato. All right, little scenario for you. You take every guy on the Bruins roster, throw football gear on them, and stick them on the field. I guarantee you they play a solid 4 quarters of football and kick some serious ass. He smirks. Now, take the Pats.
slap on some skates and pads, and put them on the ice? Can you honestly tell me they'd be able to play a full three periods and do it well? Dad narrows his eyes.
Well, no, but that's because a lot of them probably don't know how to skate.
Logan's smile is triumphant.
But they're operating on a superior level of athleticism,
he reminds my father.
Why can't they skate?
Dad sighs.
Touché, Mr. Logan, touché.
I snicker. The remainder of the dinner goes the same way, animated discussions that end with one or both of them grinning. I can't contain the burst of joy in my heart. Seeing them get along is such a relief. Now I've gotten the nod of approval from both my parents, whose opinions matter deeply to me. Dad brings up my mother as the three of us clear the table.
Your mom's thinking of coming to Hastings for Thanksgiving.
Really? I'm excited by the news. Will she stay at the inn or here at the house?
Here, of course. No sense spending money on a hotel room when she has her pick of bedrooms here.
Dad balances his plate and the salad bowl in one hand so he can open the sliding door.
I was thinking of taking a few days off and driving up to Boston with her. There are some mutual friends we were talking about visiting.
Any other child of divorce might have gotten their hopes up hearing their parents might take a road trip together, but that ship sailed a long time ago for me. I know my folks are never getting back together. They're much happier apart. But I love that they're still so close, best friends even. It's actually kind of inspiring. To my surprise, after we've thanked Dad for dinner and climbed into Logan's pickup, my parents' relationship is the first thing Logan comments on.
It's really cool that your folks remained friends after the divorce.
I nod. I know, right? I thank my lucky stars for it every day. I'd hate it if they were fighting all the time and using me as a pawn or something. Then I tense, realizing that maybe the aftermath of his parents' divorce is exactly what I've just described. Logan doesn't talk about it much, and I haven't pushed for details because it's obvious he prefers not to discuss his family, especially his father. But that's one subject I definitely don't bring up, not for his sake, but my own, because I'm terrified of revealing my true feelings on the matter. That I think Logan is making a huge mistake quitting hockey after graduation. He insists that running the business and taking care of his father is what's best for the family, but I disagree. What's best for Ward Logan is a long stint in rehab, followed by extensive addiction therapy, but hey, what do I know? A year of psych classes does not a psychologist make.
Your dad is awesome.
Logan's gaze is glued to the windshield, but there's no missing the sadness in his voice.
He seems like the kind of man who'd always be there for you, you know? Like he wouldn't desert you in the hospital if you broke your ankle or something.
His example is so alarmingly specific it makes me frown. Did that happen to you?
No.
He pauses.
To my mom, though.
The frown deepens. Your father deserted her in the hospital?
No, not really. He... You know what? Don't worry about it. Long story.
His hand rests on the gear shift and I reach over and cover it with mine. I want to hear it.
What's the point?
He mumbles.
It's in the past.
I still want to hear it. I say firmly. He lets out a weary breath.
It happened when I was 7 or 8. I was in school, so I didn't see how it went down, but I heard about it from my aunt afterward. Actually, the whole neighborhood heard about it. That's how loud she was screaming when my dad finally dragged his ass home.
Still not telling me what happened. He keeps his eyes on the road.
It was winter. The weather was shit, and Mom, slipped on a patch of ice while shoveling the driveway. Bitterness lines his tone.
Dad was inside, not plastered, but he'd had a few. Couldn't even be bothered to do the shoveling, or at least help her. Anyway, she fucked up her ankle real bad, pretty much shattered it, and he heard her yelling for help and ran outside. He didn't want to move her because they weren't sure how bad the damage was, but he did throw a blanket on her while they waited for the ambulance.
Logan's shoulders are set in a tight line, as inflexible as his jaw. I'm not sure I want to hear the rest of the story.
So the ambulance showed up, but Dad didn't ride with her. He told her he'd follow her in the car, that way he'd be able to pick me and Jeff up from school, and that was the last any of us saw of him for 3 days.
Logan angrily shakes his head.
He got in the car and took off. I have no idea where he went. All I know is that he didn't go to the hospital where his wife had to have 2 surgeries to fix her ankle, and he didn't go to the school because Jeff and I waited for hours and he didn't show. One of the teachers finally noticed we were still there, made some calls, and took us to the hospital. And my aunt drove down from Boston and stayed with us while Mom was recovering because Dad had gone AWOL.
I suck in a breath. Why did he do it?
Who fucking knows? I guess he realized he'd have to step up and take care of the kids in the house and her, and the pressure freaked him out. He went on a 3-day bender and didn't visit her at the hospital once.
Indignation on Logan's behalf seizes my chest and makes my hands tremble. What the hell kind of husband does that? What the hell kind of father? Logan has read my thoughts because he turns his head with a gentle look.
I know you're hating on him right now, but you need to understand something. He's not a bad man. He's got a disease, and trust me, he hates himself for it, more than you or I could ever hate him.
His breath comes out wobbly.
When he was sober, he was actually a really good dad. He taught me how to skate, taught me everything he knows about cars. We fixed up this sweet GTO one summer, spent hours together in the garage.
So why did he start drinking again?
I don't know. I don't think he even knows. It's the kind of thing where, like, if you were stressed out, you might have a glass of wine, right? Or a beer, a whiskey, something to calm you down. But he can't have just one. He has 2 or 3 or 10, and he just can't stop. It's an addiction.
I bite my lip. I know that, but how long does he get to keep using that addiction as an excuse for his actions? I think there comes a point where you have to stop enabling him.
We've dragged him to rehab before, Grace. It doesn't stick unless he chooses to do it himself.
Then maybe you need to cut him off. Let him hit rock bottom so he'll choose to get better.
And what?
Make him homeless,
Logan says softly.
Have bill collectors pounding on his door and repo men showing up at the house. Let his business crash and burn. I know you don't understand it, but we can't write him off. Maybe if he beat the shit out of us or treated us like pieces of garbage, then it might be easier to do that. But he's not abusive, he's self-destructive. We can encourage him to get sober. We can help him keep things afloat, but we won't desert him.
You're right. I don't understand, I admit. I don't get where this unfailing loyalty is coming from, especially when you consider the example he set for you. Where's his loyalty? Where's his selflessness? Logan flips his palm over and laces his fingers through mine.
That's the other reason I'm doing this, because of the example he set. If I abandon him, then I'm no better than he is. Then I'm selfish, and that's something I never want to be. Sometimes I hate him so much I want to kick his teeth in. Sometimes I even find myself wishing he'd die. But no matter how frustrating it gets,
He's still my father, and I love him.
His voice cracks.
I treat him the way I'd want to be treated if I was ever in his position, with patience and support, even when he doesn't deserve it.
Logan falls silent, and my heart constricts, then swells, overflowing with emotion. This guy continues to surprise me, to awe me. He's a better person than I am, better than he gives himself credit for, and if I wasn't sure about it before, then I'm damn well sure of it now. I love him.
Chapter 31. Logan. Beers at Malone's? Dean asks as we leave the arena after what might possibly be the worst game of my entire hockey career. I grit my teeth. I have plans with Grace. And even if I didn't, I wouldn't be celebrating at the goddamn bar tonight, man. He runs a hand through his shower-damp blonde hair. Yeah, it was rough out there. But it's done. Game over. No point in dwelling on it. Times like these, I wonder why he even plays hockey. For the pussy, maybe? Because from the day he joined the team, Dean has shown a lack of intensity about our sport. Which is a damn shame because he happens to be an amazing player, but he has no interest in playing hockey after college. At least not professionally. Seriously, dude, quit scowling, Dean orders. Come to the bar with us. I set the freshman up with a fake ID, so I'm showing him some moves tonight. I could use my wingman. The freshman, of course, is Hunter, who Dean has taken under his wing and is well on his way to corrupting. Nah, I'll pass. Grace and I are having a movie night. Boring. Unless it's naked movie night. Then I approve. I'm kinda hoping it is naked movie night. I desperately need to release all the pent-up tension that's been plaguing me since we lumbered into the locker room after that final buzzer, leaving the sour stench of a 0-5 score in our wake. Granted, it's just a preseason game. Doesn't count toward our standings. But if we're to take anything from tonight's loss, it's this. We're nowhere near ready. And our first game is next fucking week. Plus, we got shut out by St. Anthony's, which only pisses me off more, because St. A's team has a roster of dickheads and douchebags. I'm still stewing about the game when I walk through Grace's door a short while later, and she clucks in sympathy when she sees my face. Didn't go well, huh? She comes up and wraps her arms around me, her soft lips brushing a soothing kiss at the base of my throat. The team's still not gelling, I answer, aggravated. Coach keeps rearranging the lines, trying to find a good fit, but he might as well be jamming random puzzle pieces together. It's frustrating, especially since Dean and I are a well-oiled machine when we play on the same line. But we're also the best D-men on the roster, so Coach split us up in the hopes that we'd help the other lines not suck so hard. I'm paired up with Brodowski now, who needs so much work, I'm pretty much manning our defensive zone alone. I'm sure it'll get better, she assures me. And I promise, I'll be cheering for you in the stands next week. I grin. Thanks. I know what a big sacrifice it is for you. Grace sighs. The biggest. She swipes a t-shirt off the floor and tosses it in the laundry basket. I just want to finish tidying up, and then we can put on the movie. Is that okay? Sure. I kick off my shoes and unzip my jacket, watching as she wanders around plucking random items of clothing, all belonging to her roommate, I realize. God, Daisy must love her. Awesome roommate and OCD-ridden maid all rolled into one cute package. Grace bends over to grab a sock that's wedged between Daisy's desk and bed, and the sight of her round ass jutting out makes me groan. She glances over her shoulder. You okay? Oh yeah. Stay in that position for a minute. That exact position. Perv. You're right. How dare I enjoy the sight of my girlfriend's sexy ass sticking up in the air? My throat runs dry. I want to fuck you just like that tonight. Her breath catches. I can live with that. I chuckle at the teasing response. Then get on the bed. Naked. Now. bonus orgasms for speed. She gets rid of her top, leggings, and panties in record time, and I snicker as I reach for my zipper. Geez, one would think I haven't been meeting your needs. Her gaze tracks the movement of my fingers as I drag my fly down. I love the way she looks at me, hungry and appreciative, like she can't get enough. A minute later, I'm naked and covered with a condom. No foreplay necessary for me tonight. I'm hard as a rock and raring to go, but that doesn't stop me from playing with her for a bit. I crawl between her legs and kiss her inner thighs. Her skin is baby smooth, silky beneath my tongue, and when I lick my way up to her clit, her fingers tangle in my hair to trap me there. Chuckling, I give her what she wants. Soft, slow licks and gentle kisses until she's squirming on the mattress. I don't let her finish, though. Her first orgasm is always the most intense, and I want to feel her squeezing my dick and hear her moan my name when she comes. I plant one last kiss, then grip her hips and roll her over. All fours, baby. Bring that sweet ass toward me. Bring it, she does. Her firm bottom bumps my groin as I rise on my knees behind her, and then she rubs it against my shaft, sending a bolt of heat up my spine. 2 months together, and she's still driving me crazy, melting my goddamn brain with the pleasure she brings me. I fist my erection and guide it to the crease of her ass, sliding lower until it nudges her opening. Anticipation heats the air. This is my favorite moment. The hint of suction around my tip. The knowledge that soon she'll be clutching me tight, surrounding me with the warmth of her pussy. She's so wet I slide right in with my first thrust, filling her to the hilt. I fuck her slowly at first, wanting to prolong it. But each deep stroke scrambles my brain more and more. And soon the slow pace turns into a fast, relentless rhythm that makes me groan with abandon. But for all my talk about screwing her from behind, this position feels too impersonal. I yank her up so her back is flush against my chest, and I fill my palms with her tits, teasing her nipples as I give an upward thrust. Her head lolls to the side, and I take advantage of it, pressing my lips to her neck. I breathe her in, sucking on her smooth, fragrant flesh as I drive my cock inside her. Quick, shallow thrusts that make both of us gasp. I skim one hand down her body, grazing her tits, dancing over her belly, until I find her clit and rub it with my index finger, gentle circles that contrast the fast strokes of my cock. We've gotten good at timing our responses, synchronizing our bodies so that we shudder and release at the same time. We collapse in a sweaty tangle of limbs, breathing hard from the orgasms, kissing frantically even as we come down from the euphoric high. Afterward, she gets her laptop, and we cuddle under the blanket and start the movie. It's her pick, so naturally we're watching an old Jean-Claude Van Damme cheese fest that's bound to put us in hysterics. We're only 5 minutes in, however, when Grace's cell phone rings. She drapes across my chest to check the display, but doesn't answer the call. "It's Ramona," she says when I offer a quizzical look. "Not in the mood to talk to her right now. Let's keep watching." The phone rings again. Grace makes a frustrated noise and presses ignore. I'm not sure I blame her. Dean told me he ran into Ramona at the bar a few times, but I haven't seen her since last semester, and I don't particularly want to. "She probably just wants to hang out," Grace says, then switches the phone to vibrate. She's about to rest her head on my chest, but she barely makes contact before a loud buzz shakes the mattress. "Okay, then. Guess I should have picked silent instead of vibrate." She sits up again, snatches the cell, and freezes. "What's wrong?" I try to peek at the phone. She flips it over so I can see the screen. SOS. Is all it says. Sent by, who else? Ramona. Maybe I'm a cynical bastard, but this smacks of manipulation to me. Grace wasn't answering, so Ramona decided to make her answer. "I have to call her back." I smother a sigh, Babe, she's probably trying to scare you into calling. She's not. Grace's expression is stricken.
We don't abuse the SOS. Ever. In all the years we've been friends, we've only SOS'd each other twice. I did it when I thought I was being followed by some creep in Boston this one time. And she did it when she blacked out at a party senior year and woke up with no idea where she was. This is real, Logan.
Even if I wanted to argue, she's already hopping off the bed and making the call.
Grace. I'm actually frightened. Palms sweating, heart racing, lungs burning. But I guess that's the appropriate response to finding out your friend is being held against her will by a bunch of thugs. When she had to sneak into the bathroom to call you because the thugs in question tried confiscating her phone after she announced she wanted to leave. In the passenger side of Logan's truck, I drum my fingers against my thighs in an anxious rhythm. I want to beg him to drive faster, but he's already speeding. And he won't stop barking out questions at me. Questions to which I have no fucking answers because Ramona hung up on me 5 minutes ago and is no longer picking up her phone.
What hockey players?
Logan demands for the third time in 10 minutes.
Briar guys?
For the last time, I don't know. I told you everything she told me, Logan, so please stop harassing me.
Sorry,
he mutters. We're both on edge. Neither of us knows what we'll find when we reach the motel, and as we race toward Hastings, my conversation with Ramona buzzes through my mind like a swarm of bees. I thought there would be other people here, but it's just the players, and they won't let me leave, Gracie. They promised to give me a ride home, and now they're saying I should crash in their room, and I don't want to, and I don't even have my purse with me, just my phone. I don't have money for a cab, and nobody will come get me, and at that point, she'd started to cry, and fear had flooded my stomach. I've known Ramona a long time. I know the difference between her crocodile tears and her real ones. I know when she's fake panicking or freaking the fuck out. I know what she sounds like when she's calm and what she sounds like when she's terrified. And right now, she's terrified. The ride into town is thick with tension. My muscles are coiled so tight, my body actually feels sore by the time we reach the motel. The L-shaped brick building is located on the outskirts of Hastings, and although it's nowhere near as nice as the inn on Main Street, it's not a flea-bag shithole either. When Logan pulls into the parking lot, his blue eyes immediately darken. I follow his gaze and notice the shiny red bus parked on the pavement.
That's the St. Anthony's bus, he says in a curt voice. They're playing Boston College tomorrow, so I guess it makes sense for them to crash here for the night.
Wait, this is the team you played against tonight? He nods.
They're assholes, each and every one of them, coaching staff included.
My concern escalates. I've heard Logan trash talk opponents before, but even when he does it, I can tell there's a level of respect there. Like the rivalry with Harvard. Logan will bitch about it, but you'll never catch him saying the Harvard players are hacks or attacking their character the way he just did with these St. Anthony's guys. Are they really that bad? I ask. He kills the engine and unbuckles his seatbelt.
Their old captain was suspended last season for breaking a Briar player's arm.
Our guy didn't even have the puck when Braxton smashed into him. Their new captain is an entitled shithead from Connecticut who spit on the guys on our bench tonight every time he skated by them. Disrespectful POS. We hop out of the pickup and march right up to room 33, which was one of the few details I'd managed to pry out of Ramona while she'd been sobbing. Logan grasps my arm and moves me behind him in a protective gesture.
Let me handle this, he orders.
The deadly gleam in his eyes is too terrifying to argue with. He pounds his fist on the door, so hard he rattles the doorframe. Loud music blares inside the room, along with raucous male laughter that turns my veins to ice. It sounds like they're having a raging party in there. A moment later, a tall guy with dark hair and a goatee appears in the threshold. He takes one look at Logan's briar jacket and curls his lips into a sneer.
What the fuck do you want?
I'm here to pick up Ramona, Logan snaps.
Rap music blasts from the open door, the bass line vibrating beneath my sneakers. I peek from behind Logan's broad shoulders, trying to see what's happening inside the room. All I can make out is a wall of big, bulky bodies. 4, maybe 5 of them. Horror eddies in my belly. Oh, God. Where's Ramona? And why the hell did she think it was a good idea to party with these guys alone?
Go home, asshole.
The St. Anthony's player smirks.
She just got here. She doesn't need a ride.
Logan's jaw turns to stone.
Get out of my way, Keswick.
The music dies abruptly, replaced by a beat of silence, then the menacing thump of heavy footsteps as Keswick's teammates come up behind him. A blonde behemoth with ice blue eyes gives Logan a mocking smile.
Ah, how sweet. You crash in our after party, Logan? Yeah, I get it. You want a taste of what it's like to be a champion, huh?
Logan's answering laugh is humorless.
Yeah, I'm so fucking jealous of you for winning a preseason game, Gordon. Now move aside so I can make sure Ramona is all right, or God help me, I'll...
You'll what?
Another player jeers.
Beat us down. Go ahead and try, buddy. Not even a bruiser like you can take on 5 dudes at once.
Unless it's up the ass,
someone pipes up.
I bet he likes it up the ass.
The other players snicker loudly, but Logan is unfazed. He flashes a pleasant smile and says,
as tempting as it is to beat the shit out of you, all of you, I think I'd rather stay out of jail tonight. But I'm happy to knock on every goddamn door in this place until I find Coach Harrison's room, and then I'm gonna blow the whistle on this little sausage party you're having and let him deal with you.
Keswick is smug.
He'll probably join us. Coach doesn't give a shit if we get wasted after a game.
Yeah? Well, I'm sure he'll give a shit about what you're shoving up your nose.
Logan takes a step forward, and I instinctively tense, expecting him to throw a punch. But what he does is tap Keswick on the side of his nose, drawing my attention to the white specks that are caked under Keswick's nostrils. Logan bares his teeth in a harsh smile.
Your coke is showing, asshole. Now get the fuck out of my way. Stay out here, Grace.
He charges into the room and I'm left outside, forced into a stare down with 4 very pissed off hockey players, who apparently are all hopped up on cocaine. Panic scampers up and down my spine, fast and incessant, and it doesn't ease until Logan reappears less than a minute later. To my overwhelming relief, Ramona is at his side. Her cheeks are whiter than the coke on Keswick's face, her eyes redder than the bus parked behind us, and she runs into my arms the moment she sees me.
Oh my God,
she whimpers, squeezing me to the point of suffocation.
I'm so glad you're here.
It's okay. You're okay now. I gently stroke her hair. Come on, let's go. I try to lead her away, but she halts, her desperate eyes shooting toward the doorway.
My phone,
she stammers.
He took it.
She points at the player Logan referred to as Gordon, and a growl rips out of Logan's mouth as he charges back to the door.
You took her goddamn phone? Why? So she wouldn't be able to call for help while you motherfuckers gangbanged her?
I've never seen Logan this enraged. His blue eyes are wild, his broad shoulders trembling.
Give me the phone now.
The assholes at the door do a little shuffling around before one of them finally pulls Ramona's iPhone from his back pocket. He hurls it at Logan with lightning speed, but my boyfriend has quick reflexes and he catches the plastic case before it slaps him in the face.
Get in the car,
he tells us without turning around. I'm apprehensive to leave him, but Ramona is shaking like crazy, so I force myself to walk away. I keep my gaze fixed on the motel room the entire time, watching as Logan moves in closer and hisses something I can't make out. Whatever it is, it causes every St. Anthony's player to glare bloody murder at him, but none of them act on their volatile impulses. They simply stalk back inside and slam the door behind them. I slide onto the middle seat of the pickup, and Ramona settles in beside me, pressing her cheek against my shoulder.
I was so scared, she moans. They wouldn't let me go home.
I force her to buckle up, then wrap my arm around her shoulders.
Did they hurt you?
I ask quietly.
Force you?
She fervently shakes her head.
No, I swear. I was only there for about an hour, and they were too busy snorting coke and drinking vodka straight from the bottle. It wasn't until right before I called you that they started pawing at me and trying to convince me to strip for them. And when I told them I wanted to leave, they locked the door and wouldn't let me out.
Disapproval hardens my jaw.
God, Ramona. What were you even doing with these guys? Why would you agree to hang out with them on your own?
Another sob flies out of her mouth.
I wasn't supposed to be on my own. Jess and I ran into them after the game, and they invited us to the motel. But Jess had to meet up with her dealer first, so she gave me some cab money and said she'd meet me there. But 5 minutes after I got here, she texted to say she wasn't coming.
My upper arm feels wet, and I realize Ramona's tears have soaked through my sleeve.
She bailed on me and left me alone with them. What kind of friend does that?
A selfish one? I bite my tongue and rub her shoulder, and a part of me can't help but feel responsible for what happened to her tonight. I know it's stupid to think that, but I also know I could have prevented this if I'd been more of a presence in her life. Ramona and I had a balance, I guess. She encouraged me to be impulsive and stop second-guessing myself, and I encouraged her to not be impulsive and start second-guessing herself. I force myself to banish the guilt. No, I refuse to take responsibility for this near catastrophe. Ramona is an adult. She made the decision to party with those guys, and she's fucking lucky that I still feel some shred of loyalty toward her and came to her rescue. That last thought gives me pause, as it suddenly occurs to me that what I did tonight is the same thing I've been criticizing Logan for doing, helping someone who might not deserve it, allowing years of history and lingering loyalty to drive me to do something I didn't necessarily want to do, but felt I had to. I jerk when the driver's door flings open, but it's Logan, sliding behind the wheel with a stony look. When he addresses Ramona, however, his tone is infinitely gentle.
Are you okay? They didn't hurt you.
No, she says weakly. I'm fine.
She lifts her head and the look she gives us is swimming with shame.
Thank you for coming to get me. I'm sorry if I ruined your evening.
You're welcome,
Logan answers.
And don't you fucking worry about our evening, Ramona. The only thing that matters right now is that we got you out of there before shit got out of hand.
His gruff words circle my heart and fill it with warmth. God, I love this guy. I know his opinion of Ramona isn't exactly positive, but he still came to her aid tonight in spite of that, and I love him even more for it. I'm tempted to lean in and whisper it in his ear. Just tell him how much I love him, but courage eludes me. Truth is, I'm waiting for him to say it first. I don't know. Maybe it's leftover insecurities from what happened in April. Logan rejected me, and I'm so afraid of it happening again. I'm afraid of being vulnerable, giving him my heart, only to have him throw it back in my face. So I stay quiet. So do Ramona and Logan, and the drive back to campus is a silent one.
Chapter 32. Logan. 3 days before our first game, the team finally clicks. It's like someone flicked a switch from, "Oh God, we suck," to "We might have a chance." I still don't think we're 100% there yet, but we've shown improvement during our practices this week, and coach isn't yelling at us as often. So, progress. Since midterms are in full swing, Grace and I haven't seen each other in a few days, but we're taking a break from studying to have dinner with her dad tonight. And because I had practice, she cabbed it to Hastings with Ramona, who's visiting her own parents. I'm still not sure how I feel about them rekindling their friendship, but Grace keeps insisting that she won't let Ramona get too close again. And I guess I have to accept that. Besides, after Friday night's sexual assault waiting to happen, I'm feeling a lot more sympathy toward Ramona. Not to mention a lot more rage toward St. Anthony's. Did I mention we're facing them in the season opener? Coach isn't gonna like it, but I'm fairly certain I'll be spending a lot of time in the sin bin that night. I check my phone as I leave the arena. There's a message from Grace, saying she got to her dad's okay. And a message from Jeff, asking me to call him ASAP. Shit. Jeff doesn't usually throw around ASAPs unless it's serious, so I don't waste time calling him back. It takes 5 rings before he answers, and when he does, he sounds agitated. "Where the hell have you been the last hour?" he demands. "Practice. Coach doesn't let us bring our phones on the ice. What's up? I need you to go home and check on Dad." "Why?" I say uneasily. "Because I'm at the hospital with Kylie, and I can't fucking do it myself." "The hospital? What happened? Is she okay?" "She sliced her hand open making dinner." Jeff sounds panicked. "The ER doctor said it's not as bad as it looks. She'll just need some stitches. But Jesus, I've never seen so much blood, Johnny. They took her in now, so I'm out in the waiting room pacing like a crazy person." "She'll be okay," I assure him. "Trust the doctors, all right?" But I know Jeff won't relax until he and Kylie are walking out of that emergency room. The two of them have been madly in love since they were 15 years old. "What does this have to do with Dad?" I ask. "I was over at Kylie's, and he called when we were leaving for the ER. He was slurring and mumbling, and I don't know, he might have fallen down. I couldn't understand a fucking word he was saying. And I'm only one fucking person, John. I can't deal with two emergencies at once, okay? So please just go home and make sure he's all right." Reluctance jams in my throat like a wad of gum. Christ.